sustainable, you pick blueberry practices. Napé Farms You Pick Blueberries is located at 10280 Southeast Orient Drive in Boring, Oregon. For more information, the number is 503-663-0885 or online at napefarms.com. You are listening to KBOO Portland.
The 36th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival is almost here, and KBOO will Water Jazz Band, Joe Manis, Eric Lewis, Tim Wilcox, Mel Brown, Farnell Newton, and more. That's July 15th, 16th, and 17th under the St. John's Bridge at Cathedral Park, the longest-running music festival in Portland, brought to you by the Jazz Society of Oregon and KBOO. Full details at cpjazz.com.
Tune in to KBOO Monday through Thursday from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. for special live convention coverage produced by the Pacifica News Network. Monday, July 18th through Thursday, July 21st, tune in to comprehensive progressive coverage of the Republican Convention happening in Cleveland. Again, that's July 18th through the 21st, 5 to 9 p.m. for coverage from the Republican Convention produced by the Pacifica News Network here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Good morning. It is 2 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are tuned to your very own community radio station, KBOO. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this is Positively Revolting. We are here with you on Friday. Back with you on Friday, I guess I should say, after exploring the wilds of our inner natures last week. And we thank Linda Olson Osterlin for sitting in with us for us. And doing a great job.
Being positively revolting.
Indeed. Thanks very much, Linda. And now we're back. And this morning.
Boy, howdy. Stuff's happening.
It's like we sort of started talking a while back and sort of pondering, well, we haven't been on the air for 2 weeks, so what's happened that we need to talk about? And frankly, there's so much stuff that has gone on in the last 10 days or so that we hardly know where to start. And it's not really an uncommon position, actually, because this is a time of trauma. It is a time of amazing acts of violence, alienation, outrage. It is a time that we are really, I don't know if it's, so the couple of conversations we've had is, really, are things getting progressively worse so much faster? Are we spinning faster and faster into the abyss? Or are we actually more in touch with each other things are going on pretty much like they have been, but we're more aware of each other's circumstances because of the instantaneous communications that technology is allowing us.
Well, and the amount of destruction technology is allowing. We were talking about, you know, in the 70s, there were a number of terrorist groups, left-wing terrorist groups in Europe in particular, and here, but they didn't have the technology to do. They were also white people, so people weren't so freaked out.
Well, and that brings us to that other topic that we really wanted to talk about, and that's racism and white people's responsibility to end it. Lynn, you had an experience earlier this week listening to KABU.
I did indeed. Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott had a wonderful show on More Talk Radio on Monday. If you get a chance, go into the archives and listen to it. And it was very heartfelt. And they were talking about what do you tell your children. They had it was a very specific topic, and some African American people called in and seemed to be able to be on topic. And I listened to the white people, except I will name someone particular, except for Francis, who has more perhaps knowledge of of the circumstances.
Who seems to get it. Yeah.
Who seems to get it, that just couldn't stay on topic. It's a painful, it's very painful for people to admit that they don't really get it, and it's so historically embedded. There's a great article, 11 Common Ways White Folk Avoid Taking Responsibility for Racism in the U.S. by Robin DiAngelo. As we're seeing, the article's about a year old, but things have not exactly changed that much since then. Saying Sadly. The two most effective beliefs that prevent us, the white peoples, from seeing racism as a system are that racists are bad people and that racism is a conscious dislike. And that is a stumbling block. If we are going to get to the point where folks can really see, it is so embedded in us, which I am not saying as an excuse, that's just a fact, but it takes some work, it takes some self-knowledge, and it's okay to know that to be corrected on your racism, you can go from there and feel better.
And so there's a couple of things here. One is, when you were telling me about the experience of listening, I didn't hear the show because, in fact, I was trying to decamp from the Oregon Country Fair. But when you told me about what you heard, I was struck by the similarity of experience when you and I talk about reproductive justice or rape culture. And we have had man after man calling up to talk about bicycle transportation or corporate
deflection, I get it.
You know, corporate citizenship, all important things in their own time. But we were trying to focus on this thing that was kind of, important, especially to women.
And I will say that Cecil and Celeste were much more patient with these people than we are with them. But thank you, Cecil and Celeste. I tried to take a lesson from that. Thank you very much.
We can aspire to be patient as well, although maybe not so much,
because I think
the world is on fire and we really, it's sort of a state of emergency. It has been since I came to consciousness in 1980 and I ain't seen it get a lot better. So I think it is important that we really do take this head on. And one of our questions this morning then is really pointed at white folks to challenge you and to have you call in and talk about what your experience is with confronting racism, with confronting racism within your family, within yourself, within your workplace, with confronting and interrupting racism. What's your experience and comfort level in doing that? What have you learned from the experiences? If you don't interrupt racism, why not? Because I think that that's super important too. And it's a conversation that is important to have. And that's why we would like to make way for it this morning on the air. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Please do give us a call. Of course, you know, the events of last week with the murders of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. That really, again, these egregious murders of unarmed black men doing nothing, really. you know, murders by police has sparked outrage among some. But the fact that it continues really unabated after a year and a half's highly focused attention, national focused attention, that says something to me too, right? We can have outrage. We can, and many people can have outrage. And yet we see the system absolutely not changing. You know, we still see police being able to kill with impunity. I do believe that there have been two cops indicted in the last year. So that's a bit of a shift, because two cops have been indicted is much greater than zero cops indicted. But that's not enough of a shift. The murders are still happening. And indictments or not, people are still dead. Many of those people being unarmed black men. So, again, how do we shift the system? How do we break it down? And how do we do that together, right? How do we practice solidarity really and truly? So, let's go ahead and take a caller. 503-231-8187, the number to call. Good morning, Sunny. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was one of those people that called into Celeste and Cecil's show, which I enjoy and I appreciate. And I'm afraid that I might have seemed like a deflector, and I didn't mean to. And what I brought up the other day is, amidst the rightful grief and mourning for officers who were shot, the best way to keep good police safe is to prosecute and punish the bad police, and I hope that that's beginning to sink in. And that's kind of what I was trying to say on the Cecil and Celeste mm-hmm. show, is when we really kind of look at what is happening, then we can make it better for everybody. And they asked how I address racism with my own children, and I mentioned the fact that I went through two rather vivid incidents of racism towards myself in front of my kids, and my kids are still living in the country that is put across by the media that everything's fine, there's no real big problem, and basically they have a choice and a right to live there because they don't quite understand yet. But when somebody literally throws money at a person instead of putting it back in their hands, this occurred on Amtrak. And when I was approached by an individual, a stranger, who literally threw their arms around me and hauled me down a grocery aisle, and no one would help me because I was
Sunny, I'm afraid that we're talking about actually what's happening in this country with people of color.
So what I had told my children about racism, and I still stand that way, is that it's been a terrible story for American Indians like myself. It's been a horrible story beyond words, and also if you say anything about it, you get hit very, very hard. And then additionally, I tell them that still it comes down to the individual, that each person, everyone that you encounter, you make the choice whether or not you're going to bring forward those animosities or not. And many, many people of color and of unfortunate class still choose, when they are approached by people who are from the other side, often more dominant, more advantaged, still choose to greet each individual in a good, kindly way. And we see that, and that's all that I say. But believe me, I have tried to convey to my kids it's still a war zone. In fact, it's a worse war zone, and unfortunately in some ways, but the only way we can greet it is with our hearts. But there is a lot of trouble out there. That's what I say.
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand to be actively racist, it does necessitate access to power. And this is one of those conversations that we have, you know, often, that people of color may have individual likes, dislikes, prejudices, and preconceived notions of other folks, but without the institutionalized power behind them, that's not racism. That racism is that prejudice plus that institutionalized power, and that is the realm of white people in this country. And that's why Lynn and I are pretty strongly speaking out this morning.
Well,
we expect others to as well.
Individualized power, because I'll tell you what I've encountered also at KBOO even, and throughout the valley and etc., is that just an awful lot of white people are going about their hate and in kind of covert, you know, individualized yet tacky ways, that the attitude that a lot of white people are turning on people of color in Oregon is really noteworthy. It's appalling. And for instance, I'm in a neighborhood where somebody decided that they could put a noose on my employer's fence. Well, I'm half Indian working here. He also has Indian descent. Mm-hmm. And here we are, 2016, and I'm an Indian, and they're still, I don't speak it. And I don't even feel it much because I see it as so delusional. What do you do with it? I mean, it's so backwards, so regressive. It's nothing at all to be proud of. But I'll hang up and anyway. That's all.
Sunny, thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Hang in there. And it is 8:15 in the morning. You are listening to Positively Revolting. This is Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are on your community radio station, KBOO. You know, the next couple weeks, we will actually be preempted for special Democracy Now! Coverage of the upcoming conventions. That's right. Next
we'll
week,
have the gun-toting Republican convention.
Oh my goodness. There's the Republican convention next week, the Democrat convention the week after that, and Democracy Now! Providing coverage each morning for a couple of hours. So this is your chance to be positively revolting in July, I think. This is it. 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning if you would like to join us in this conversation. What can white people do to counter racism, to end racism, to accept our responsibility for doing so? What can we do to, you know, look at those ways? I hate to say they're unconscious things, but oftentimes they really are. And why are they unconscious things? Because our entire society backs up.
It's fed. We are fed a steady diet of it.
Of stereotypes, of phrasing that perpetuates the marginalization of communities of color, of
and
people of color.
That's the easy way, too. It is very easy to fall back on to those ways of thinking, and it's a little harder to examine. And I
mean, let's look at Warner Brothers cartoons, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is one of those things that I've argued with folks about, you know, because I hang out with people that are geeks and love animation, and you know, many of us grew up with Warner Brothers. That was our Saturday morning fare, you know, and a lot of those were old rerun classic cartoons fresh from World War II. And a lot of them are super racist.
Oh,
super racist.
Yes.
And there are still an astonishing number of people who refuse to believe that. Oh, it's just fun. It's just a cartoon.
That's how, or
you
here's
read
what
so
I love.
Much into that.
That's how it was back then. Oh, that's my
right.
favorite one.
That is always a good excuse for never changing a thing. I mean, you know, feudalism. Oh, it's...
Wait, we're getting that again, so that's...
yeah, everything old is new again. It's true. 503-231-8187. Also, I want to encourage you to like us on Facebook. You can always follow along Positively Revolting on the Book of Face. You can find us there, Positively Revolting, or on Twitter. You can follow us throughout the week at Positive Revolt. And those are the many ways you can contact us. We're reading interesting notes from our engineer, Pixie. 503-231-8187. One of the things, I suppose, that gets me is the absolute mistake of saying, I'm not racist, I'm colorblind, I don't care if you're green or purple with polka dots. That, if you ever, as a white person, feel that about to come out of your mouth, stop it. I'm just going to say, stop it immediately and try to ask yourself why you feel the need to justify the fact you're not a racist at that moment. Because chances are good something just made you uncomfortable and it's probably a learning moment.
And it's okay.
And it's okay to learn, right?
It's okay. How dare you suggest that I could have said or done something racist? It's like, it's okay. And it is difficult for a few moments. And then you can go past that.
And
if you so desire.
And actually learn.
Yeah.
And actually learn. And this is the thing about interrupting racist behavior. It's, I think, super important to actually distinguish behavior from people. Because sometimes all of us do unconscious things, do unthinking things, say things that are harmful. And it is, I believe, strongly the responsibility of white people to say, hey, that, I have an issue with that. That is, that's making me really uncomfortable. Hey, what I heard you just say actually perpetuates the stereotype and is harmful to our community. It is harmful to people. You know, that you can say these things in a way that doesn't say you as a person are bad. What you said is troubling. What you said is problematic. What you said is insulting, hurtful, and offensive. But as a person, you aren't. Necessarily, right? Especially if you actually stop and reflect and you can take some responsibility.
And growing up being fed what we were all spoon-fed, how would you think that would not happen?
Yeah, I mean, that is sort of the thing. So having those unrealistic expectations often freezes people into inaction, because if you haven't already come through, if you haven't already unpacked and unlearned all of your isms, then you're not worthy, right? No. In fact, we're all on this learning process, right? And for white people, we have, again, we get to learn about racism from a more academic perspective than the people of color who are, in fact, feeling it daily, feeling it hourly, feeling it constantly in their lives. And you know, again, not the same, not a 100% straight across the board the same, but as women and as a queer person, I can understand that we again have the ability as marginalized people in those communities to come together, to find our power, to advance our power. But it's really the job of men to stop rape, of straight people to stop homophobia, right? It is the job of the people who are not on the downside of power to do something about the behavior, right? And that's, I think, a really super important point to stress. I want to go ahead and welcome Anne to the air, shall we?
Let's do that.
Good morning, Anne. You are on the air. Good morning, Anne. You are on the air.
Hello.
Hi there.
Anne. You're on the radio.
I'm on the radio.
You're on the radio this very minute.
Okay, I got it. So I think that there are two ways that white people can address racism. One is individually and one is systemically.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a, on the Harvard, there's like a Harvard implicit bias test you can take online and find out where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And once you find out where you are, then you can start working on it. And there's lots of ways to do that. There's race talks. I mean, I just say Google everything. But locally, there's race talks at the Kennedy School.
Yes.
And then on the institutional side, you know, institutional racism was built by and for white, so we are responsible to dismantle it. And locally, there's the Marilyn Buck abolitionist movement, and there's Surge. I would recommend that white people attend the White Privilege Conference, if at all possible,
yes.
Or just Google white privilege. So we have to do it individually, and we have to do it systemically.
Yeah, another good resource is Resolutions Northwest. That is actually doing a class and do occasional classes for interrupting racism for white people to go and learn that in a class setting with some support and skill building. Thank you very much for calling
in
with
Anne,
those resources.
Thank you, Anne, for being an incredibly informed person.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
And
on topic.
Awesome. 503-231-8187. We can do this thing. And good morning, Tim. You are on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling up. All through my life, I've never felt comfortable with putting people apart in categories and stuff. And I ended up working on reservations and overseas with different kinds of people. And I acknowledged from the beginning that I was raised in a racist society and that I had some traces of racism in me myself. But the way I felt the best way to overcome it was to meet people of different colors and different backgrounds, different cultures, different beliefs, and to share food with them and become friends when you find someone that's really, you know, enjoys things that you do and stuff, and stand by them
mm-hmm.
when they're under pressure. Like once in Paraguay, we were partying, and the police arrested us, and they took my American friend and I and Paraguayan to jail. And we started talking in Guarani to the police, and they were going to let us go, but they wanted to keep the Paraguayan guy. Well, we refuse to leave. That's a small and relatively irrelevant example, but what I mean is all people need a way of avoiding it, and they don't.
Yeah.
That's one way we can start repairing things, by standing together and talking with each other.
I absolutely agree with you.
Thanks so much, Tim.
You're welcome.
Bye. Thank you, Tim. That standing together thing is so important. And this, I'm going to go ahead and talk a moment about some experiences I had with Occupy, who I love Occupy the movement. I do. I'm still inspired by Occupy the movement, as opposed to Occupy the movie. No. Occupy the 10-part TV special. No. And as somebody who attended, if not facilitated, most of the General Assemblies in Portland, there is a persistent trend that I noticed that occasionally I would call out. And it was a troubling, troubling trend. And that was, if we were talking about class, if we were talking about banking standards, if we were talking about the banks, if we were talking about corporations, if we were talking about corporate personhood, if we were the fiction of corporate personhood, I guess I should be very specific. If we were talking about canceling debt and student debt, then we were talking about real stuff, important stuff. We were moving the movement forward. If we started bringing up issues around people of color, racism, how communities of color are disproportionately affected by
sexism,
the racist system.
Too.
And if we talked about sexism in the movement, in the camps, if we talked about sexual abuse in the movement, in the camps, if we talked about women's issues and reproductive rights, if we talked about queer issues,
all right.
Then basically the louder voices, who were generally white men of the cis and straight variety, would fairly much tell us, you know, yeah, we are with you. Yeah, totally. But we got to get this important stuff out of the way first, because those things are going to divide us. Right? Some people actually used those words. Most of the time, it was the white men that were saying, yeah, that's important, but
move
divisive.
Move on. Move on, people.
So we got to get to, we got to stay to the big issues first. Well, big issues are really big depending on your perspective and where you're standing. Because, in fact, if you are a straight white man, those are the only issues that affect you personally. right? You're not personally affected by the other issues that are affecting the
rest
of us.
Well, you are, but it's
in a more indirect
the
way.
The way you're affected, though, is that you need to look
right
at your own, inside your own head.
Well, there's that, too.
That's what I'm saying.
And as a whole, we are all affected when anyone is oppressed, right? But it just struck me over and over again that there was this strong plurality that were basically defining what the real issues were, and it was the ones that pertained to them as people who are generally experiencing the most privilege. Anything that had to do with actually bringing up more marginalized communities were deemed divisive. I just got to say that. Disheartening at best. So 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We are talking about white people addressing racism. We are talking about how to actually build solidarity with each other. We are talking about also what to do. This is something we sort of touched on at the very beginning, in that, you know, we are living in times of overload. We are living in times of trauma and challenge. I don't know. I don't know that I can watch another person murdered by the police on video. Right.
Well, they have to be shutting your eyes.
Right. And yet this is a horror that I get to shut my eyes to if I choose to.
Yes.
Right. But it is a horror nonetheless. And therefore, I cannot shut my eyes to it. Right. I cannot. And so what do we do about that? How do we actually build solidarity? How do we actually listen to each other and support each other so that we can take broad based action together to make the positive social changes we need to make in the world? It's kind of a tall action. Part of it is staying grounded and not being fearful. And I really want to stress that this morning, not being fearful.
Yes. And don't watch too much CNN, MSNBC, and of course, I don't have to say Fox News to our listeners.
The corporate owned press, maybe yes, not having our best interests at heart.
Not so much.
503-231-8187. And good morning to Diet. You're on the air. Good morning, Diet.
Good morning. Thank you for having this really important topic. I really appreciate it. My advice as to what every white person should do to identify their own internalized racism is take the Harvard Implicit Bias Test.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard about that.
Actually, we had a caller that talked about that this morning.
And
oh,
it's
great. I missed that.
That's all right.
Sorry, I missed that.
No
but,
problem.
Please do talk about it.
Anyone can go and Google Harvard Implicit Bias and get you on this absolutely fabulous website that lets you take, in the privacy of your own conscience, this test that really reveals amazing things. You know, I teach about violence and nonviolence, and I thought, oh, I know the connections between white people and violence as opposed to black people and violence. But the Harvard Implicit Bias Test told me that I have unconscious bias that still connects a black face with violence more than I connect a white face with violence.
Right.
So it's really revealing, and people can just take it, and they don't have to tell anybody else what they learned, but they can learn something from it.
That's it, and it is an excellent resource. I am posting it to our Facebook page even now, so folks can find
Marvelous.
It easily. And I thank you. You're the second person that's named that as a resource this morning, but I think it is worth explaining a little
criticism.
Bit more of what it is, because actually, when it comes right down to it, it is at the heart of what we're talking about. And
exactly.
I thank you for bringing it up and talking about it.
Sure. My pleasure.
Thanks, right. Diane.
Take good care.
Bye.
And it is super important to know, actually, about our own biases. And again, we get, as white people, we get caught up in, I'm good. And I'm a social justice advocate, and I want the world to be a better place, and I for everyone, and therefore,
and you do, and that's good.
And if anyone hears something that comes out of my mouth that sounds like racism, they must be wrong because I'm not. I'm good.
No. Well,
they must. It must be. It must be on them. They've misinterpreted what I've said. That's not what I meant. Now, how could they say that about me? Don't they know the good work I've done? I mean, And these are all things that are pretty common responses. All things that are pretty common responses.
That's okay. You just gotta get past one step further.
One of the most important things you can do when getting feedback and things like something sounding racist bad about is to maybe just sit with that feedback for a minute without saying anything. Or like, you misunderstood, or you're misunderstood, or none of that. Just sit with it for a minute. Maybe thank the person. In one of the early anti-racist workshops I went to, in the 80s, I remember the trainer in the 80s saying, you know, it's embarrassing. You know, it's embarrassing to you that you have not excised all of these things from your subconscious, that you are a product of your upprinting, that we are all product of this racist culture, but in that way, it's kind of embarrassing to have snot on your face after you sneeze.
You can wipe it off.
You want a friend to tell you. You don't want to just go around with that without you knowing. And so along those same lines,
if you have toilet paper on your shoe, it's there's so many
things. You want a friend to tell you. And so along those same lines, you know, first of all, do a lot of work on yourself and understand what your own biases are in the privacy of your own computer. That's a great idea. And that way you can actually sort of look at where you need to look internally at yourself because of our upbringing in this racist culture. That's super important. And then you can understand when somebody does call you on something, it's fine, it's good, it's helpful, it's not humiliating. In fact, you need to thank them.
Well, and there are two things in psychology I learned a long time ago. You need to get past shame, which is toxic, and to guilt. Guilt's okay, you can deal with, we can deal with guilt, it can go, but shame is toxic, and that's where a lot of this comes from in people when you don't want to look at something. And there is just no time anymore to not be examining as white folks are racist.
It's so true.
You know, and I remember, we're going to get to, Frances is on the line, we're going to get to you in a minute, Frances. I remember, it was the Quentin Tarantino movie, the Revenge movie, and I'm not remembering, when with Jamie Foxx. Oh, God.
I don't like Tarantino. No idea what you're talking about.
Well, but anyway, Jamie Foxx is getting revenge. He was a free guy. He was then caught back in slavery. But here's my piece of racism on that. So they're on this plantation, and Leonardo DiCaprio is this horrible, of course, slave master. But he's got a wife, and so at the end, of course, Jamie Foxx is shooting everybody up. And I never thought he'd shoot Miss Ella, or whatever her name was, and he turns around, and I went, oh.
Are you doing spoilers on our show?
That's okay. And he turns around and shoots her, and to me it was like, oh yeah, I didn't think he'd shoot the white woman. I had to look at that about five times in my head, because it's everywhere, and I thought, I don't blame him, but there he goes.
There you go.
Yeah, you just never
know
when those
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, my
but
thing
it's okay.
Was,
other people
no, no.
probably do.
My thing was that I thought, he won't be shooting the white woman as he's getting revenge on everyone. That was what was in my head. I find that a fairly racist thing to think about.
All right.
It's equal opportunity. Okay, never mind. Francis, save me.
I have no idea.
Save me from my own mouth, Francis.
Hi, Frances.
Save
you're on the
me,
air.
Save me. man.
I know.
Little children, white or black, do not want to have to deal with this. You know, I just had a conversation with my niece. I have mixed children, so does she. And her son, she's starting to worry because he's, you know, I think he's around 10. And she's trying to slowly give him this information. But every time he gets a little bit, she can see it's heartbreaking. You know, that he even has to deal with this. And mommy shouldn't have to deal with this anymore. It's wrong that moms have to go out in the streets and stand up and protest and go to City Hall and go wherever to tell people to remove the traps. And that's what I view them as traps for the children to feed this mongering prison industry and warmongering. And I don't know. I think it's good that white people are talking about it right now.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. Time.
It's a good thing. But, you know, why do they get to have the power to make it change is what I'm thinking. You know, why is it still that way? You know, why do we even have to go there? Why is it not resolved? And I really hope that this commission the president has, where he's talking with people from law enforcement and Black Lives Matter and different leaders in the country, I hope we end up having some kind of a truth and reconciliation commission that really addresses all these issues. But I'm concerned that we're not really going to the real problem, and you can see it in corporate media. There's the perpetration of conflict. Doesn't matter what it is, there has to be a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear about
if it bleeds, it leads.
The elections that they talk about
numbers.
Well, what kind of weapon are you going to use? If he used that in the debate, what kind of weapon are you going to come back with? What are they talking about a weapon for? I mean, what is that all about?
Right.
It's always a conflict, promoting conflict.
It's the history of this country.
And people make a lot of money off of conflict.
Right, and it's the history of this country.
Off of those wars over there in the Middle East, mm-hmm. where lots of babies are getting killed. No child anywhere in this world should have to suffer the trauma of this hateful conflict. To me, they're perpetrating conflict. It's promoting conflict. You know, and our hearts go out to the people in France. But do our hearts go back out to the people in Syria who are being
right.
bombed? If we saw one day of the terror that they have to deal with over there, maybe we'd have a whole different approach of how we're going to resolve this huge conflict. Because as I see it, people are just reacting to the continued choice to just inflict more pain and misery. Now, if that's how we're going to deal with it, like President Obama said the other day, all ISIL knows is killing. Well, is that all we know?
Yeah, really.
Right.
Is that all we can do? Can we not take a
step
some
projection.
Above that? Can we not step out of the box?
Yes.
And maybe go rise above all this? And I know you guys can't talk politics.
Well, we can't. We can't talk about it.
We just can't endorse anyone.
The white woman you were talking about. There's a white woman there's a beautiful picture of her marching with people from Black Lives Matter, and her name is Jill Stein. And she's the Green Party's presidential candidate. And I understand the Green Party is just growing in leaps and bounds since the Democratic Party dissed Bernie Sanders. So check that out. Because we need leadership that is promoting peace and conflict, peaceful conflict resolution.
Okay.
So,
Thank you, Francis.
Thank you so much for your call. Take care. 503-231-8187, the number to call to join us on the air in this freewheeling conversation this morning. We are talking about the responsibility of white people to address racism. We are talking about really getting into the nitty-gritty of knowing yourself and understanding that we are the products of the racist cultures we are raised in. And that it's a serious issue that we really must address without being deflective. And
that was the message.
And oh, so much more. We are also talking about the needing to stay grounded, to not succumb to fear and divisiveness, as is so easy to do in times so full of trauma. So
the sky is falling, but not from terrorism.
Yes.
And you know what was on the Temple of Delphi, what was on there was the message that was on as people went in was know thyself.
Indeed.
So,
yep, it's pretty wise words. Also, want to recommend that you like us on Facebook, Positively Revolting, right there on Facebook. We post articles throughout the week, mostly Lynn posts articles throughout the week, though we've just this morning posted the things that we've been talking about, the 11 common ways white folks avoid taking responsibility for racism, and also the Harvard Implicit Bias Test. It now has a link there on our Facebook page. You can also follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt, in that beautiful way of trying to accomplish all things without wrecking ourselves. I deal mostly with our Twitter stream. Lynn deals mostly with our Facebook stream. And there you have it. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And let's go ahead and talk to Karen. Good morning, Karen. You're on the air.
Good morning, Ani and Lynn. This is a great discussion. Thank you for hosting it. I just wanted to raise a couple of points that we haven't talked about yet. One of them is the idea of the internalized oppressor, which I learned from a book by Paulo Freire called Pedagogy of the Oppressed.
Yes, that's a great book.
It is a great book. And so we have an internalized oppressor that for us women or people of color is going to tell us that we're not smart enough, not powerful enough, not good enough, whatever, anything to put us down. And then we have, as white people, if we are, we have the internalized oppressor that we then apply to people of color. So we have this two-pronged thing that we have to work on.
Ah, the two-pronged approach.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And another point is I learned about the cultural construction of whiteness in a book by Paul Kaivel. It's called Uprooting Racism. It's a really good description of historically even Irish people or people who were white-skinned who were doing mining work. I think Finns were considered black for legal purposes. That it is, in fact, it's class-based and it's power-based. And then, and I know a lot of people understand that, but I found that book really helpful. And then,
what was the name of it again?
It's Uprooting Racism, and the author is Paul Kaivel, K-I-V-E-L. He's Jewish, and so he has, and he covers different kinds of bias towards different cultures, but particularly towards African Americans, but not solely. And then I took a class from Keila Johnson, well, series of them at Resolution, sponsored by Resolutions Northwest, which one of your previous callers mentioned.
Yeah.
And our teacher Keila Johnson mentioned microaggression,
yes,
which is coming out of this, I call it drinking from the sewer of racial racism, you know, when we as individuals were programmed. An example of this, I went to Stand Up, Don't Shoot. It was a picnic protest the other day. And I was cooking hamburgers for folks, right? So... a young man came up to me, and he was African-American, and he said, well, can I have one of those? Are they free? And, you know, or do we have to pay? And I said, oh, sure, just help yourself. And later on, I said to myself, well, gee, that help yourself, might that have triggered something in him about, you know, if, God forbid, he was unemployed, if might that have actually sounded like a put down.
Mm-hmm,
I'm just trying to be really conscious and examine myself. I was on a defense committee for the Black Liberation Army way back in the day, and I have an African American goddaughter. I met her when she was 7. She's now 46, and we talk a lot and we text a lot, and this period has been really painful. But I am trying to really be conscious of my intentional message, not what I'm intending to say, not being understood in the way I'm intending it, because underneath it there's all this history.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really complicated. It's sometimes I feel I can't really even say anything. So that's it for the moment. But thank
Karen,
you,
Karen.
So
I'm really
much
glad that you brought up the idea of microaggressions. It's something that we've sort of danced around without actually naming this morning. First of all, I want to say that at KBOO, I'm so excited to be a part of this amazing community radio station, because we understand that it takes really strong communities to do community radio. And we have, for people involved with the station, for for staff, for volunteers, for board members, we have monthly discussion groups where we actually chew into microaggressions and how to interrupt and all of this at the first Saturday of every month. because we know how important this work is and how constant we have to really return our attentions to it. And, you know, how we're, it's a constant unlearning process. It's a lifelong unlearning process. And some of the things that we talk about in terms of microaggression, those are those statements that a lot of white folks say without really thinking about them that can have huge impact on people who are marginalized, on people of color. And one of those things that I've heard over and over again, it's people think that they're giving compliments when in fact it sounds anything but a compliment to the person. There is a time here where there was a public affairs show, and a host who was reading a piece that she had written for it, who was an immigrant and, you know, had a non-Anglo name and a little accent in her presentation. And a volunteer said to me, "Wow, she's really articulate."
Oh, God, I've heard that one a million times.
Turns out, and what I actually
and
got
you're
to
so
reflect,
well spoken.
What I got to reflect back to this person was she's actually a professor of English literature. and yes, she might be articulate because she's a professor of English literature.
Or
you
just
might expect
because
that.
She's articulate.
Right. You know, but there was this sort of like, whoa, I thought she might you know, you have these ideas, you know, all of a sudden confronted with the ideas of where you had put that person, what box you had put that person into. And that to say, wow, you speak really well, or you're so articulate for someone like you, is the implication. And so check that one out the next time it's about to fall out of your mouth.
I would like to say, mentioned she was one of the, in our last caller, that was Karen, I believe, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. In the book that one book that she was mentioning, that the Irish people, even though they were white, they were treated like black people. I would say, no, that's not true. They were not brought over here against their will, and they were not owned as slaves. Those are very large. They can be have been discriminated against terribly, and of course, I've heard that before, why the Irish were the black of the... No, they weren't owned,
mm-hmm.
And...
It gets super complicated. Irish, Italian immigrants were not accepted as whites.
Right, but...
And Irish were, and Scottish were, some Brits were,
yes,
brought over as indentured servants.
Right.
But you then eventually worked to your freedom,
yeah,
in that indentured part, but you didn't have much freedom at the time. It's complicated, but again, not the same as slavery.
Mm-mm.
Not the same as the transatlantic slave trade. It's just a whole nother thing.
Yeah, just
students
to be clear
of
about
history.
That.
Yes, good thing to be clear about.
Thank you.
503-231-8187, the number to call. Good morning, Ed. You are on the air.
Thank you. Thank you so much for what you do at KBOO for your show, as well as others, to keep us informed and learning ourselves.
Hey, did you know KBOO, I'm just going to throw this in there because I'm so excited about it this week. Willamette Week had the Best of Portland contest going on for the last couple months. And KBOO actually placed as the runner-up for Best Talk Radio next to NPR. So that means this national, huge national talk-focused radio station placed first. But KBOO, independent, scrappy, in-your-face, community radio placed second. And I'm so proud of that.
I know. In fact, I have the Willamette Weekly sitting in my truck. Your show so much inspired me that I had to pull over from going to a job and talk. I grew up in Northeast Portland, inner Northeast, and I'm a 60-year-old white guy, and I could never experience the life of a black person, even experiencing the same situation, the same situation where we were confronted, you know, by the police or something like that, and seeing what I've seen, you know, growing up, and sorry, I'm a little nervous.
It's okay.
It's all right.
That friends of mine have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's always been shocking to me to watch my friends have to go through, especially as young men, go through what they went through. And it's funny, I have a very close friend, and we have long conversations being that we're getting older, and we can have the same experience. And, you know, he'll tell me, well, this person in, during this situation is, was, I could just, you know, the most minute racism, and he picked up on it. And even though I didn't, because his experience in life is different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I quantify the fact is that I could never experience only through him what he sees. And I can't, I don't argue with that. Because, you know, what I've learned is, you know, you can argue what you think, but you can't argue what you feel.
Absolutely.
I can't take that away from somebody, and that's what they experience.
Absolutely. So, that's a really good way to put that in.
Well, and it's, you know, every chance, you know, that I get where I can correct myself, or just having conversations amongst friends, that we can have these conversations and be respectful. And, you know, luckily, I've always been a working guy. My mom was a working guy, but she's very progressive in her day. And she was ostracized for dating black men back in the early 60s, almost lost her job.
Right.
And so we're... I've experienced things like, you know, where I was in Alaska, where I had this job. I was a supervisor at this big building. It was for a janitorial company. And one night, one of the guys in our crew was in the Air Force. He was a black man, and he used to go home for lunch at, you know, like at 10 at night and come home. And in Alaska, it's very cold in winter, so he parked his car and ran into the building. The police stopped him and had him handcuffed, and I got a call from security to come up and say, well, your man's handcuffed out in front of the building. And we went out there, the security guard and I, and we wanted to know why you were trying to arrest this guy. And he said, well, there was a robbery five blocks away, and then he fits the profile. And as I talked, they threatened to throw me in jail for, you know, for interrupting. And...
Right.
But finally, you know, we, you know, explaining to these policemen that, that it's very unlikely that this man has two jobs and he's in the Air Force and he goes to school.
Right.
That he would be your suspect. You know, he only's got half an hour of lunch. I don't think he would take off and do whatever. Well, anyway, they, long story short, they, you know, let him go. And as his day was
because
ran,
white people vouched for him is what that comes down to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, and
well,
Ray
Ed,
was named,
thank you for your call. We're kind of running out of show.
Yes, okay.
But
well,
I thank you so much for your call.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. I want to let folks know that coming up this morning on KBOO, your community radio station, at 9 o'clock is Veterans Voice with Angie and Marvin. They'll be interviewing Brian Lewis on men recovering from military sexual trauma. At 10 o'clock, we will hear from Chris Andre with Air Cascadia. At 10:15, Flashpoints examines the recent decision by the International Court of Arbitration on the dispute between China and the Philippines in regards to which country controls a series of islands in the South China Sea. And Harvey Wasserman talks about opportunities for voter suppression and throwing the current election. At 11 o'clock, we hear excerpts from the Race Talks public discussion held earlier this week on what it means to be white in America. Thanks so much for your support in our 25-hour membership marathon that ended at 7 o'clock this morning. It was fabulous. It was high-spirited. It was power-packed. It was fun. And we thank you very much for your support as KBOO continues to be the little community radio station that can. And with that, we are out of time. Look at that.
Stay
at
positively revolting and continue listening to Cable.
We'll be back at the end of this month with more Positively Revolting. In the meantime, in the next couple weeks, you'll be treated to some special coverage of the elections the Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez way. Stay tuned.
Every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Happy to announce that KBOO now has 10,000 followers on Twitter. Follower number 10,000 is our employee union, CWA Local 7901. Thank you to everyone who has brought us to this point. If you haven't yet followed us, look for KBOO on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for links to upcoming events, audio interviews, and contests to win tickets and other prizes. Thank you to all of our social media supporters.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Crop Up Dinner Series and Market Showcase. The Aurora Dinner will be held July 21st from 5:30 to 9 p.m. The dinner series lets you dine on dishes built around Oregon's specialty crops that are grown in the local regions surrounding each dinner site. It has been designed to increase awareness of the bountiful diversity of Oregon's specialty crops, including fruits, vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, and nursery crops. Again, that's the Crop Up Dinner Series and Market Showcase, July 21st from 5:30 to 9 p.m. at 15210 Northeast Miley Road in Aurora. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's Veterans Voice